I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast.
Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. This week on the show, my friend Kate Flanders joins me. She is the author of The Year of Less. Very long subtitle. Not so much less in the subtitle, but How I Stopped Shopping, Gave Away My Belongings, and Discovered Life is Worth More Than Anything You Can Buy in a Store. And I've had the pleasure of knowing Kate for a few years now. And we actually get together every once in a while for coffee, because she is based in British Columbia, and she comes and visits here in Victoria. And every time she comes here, we try to get together for coffee with myself and Paul Jarvis and Mark Johns and a few other people, depending on who's in town. What The Year of Less does, we'll dive into the book specifically in this episode, but I love the way Kate approaches this kind of stuff. And I wanted to convey that in this episode. So our conversation is going to talk about how you can have a year of less and what that actually means. So I'm looking forward to having this conversation. I'm looking forward to having you hear it. And so let's just stop looking forward and make it happen. Here is my conversation with Kate Flanders on the Productivityist Podcast. Kate Flanders is with me. She is the author of The Year of Less, How I Stopped Shopping, Gave Away My Belongings, and Discovered Life is Worth More Than Anything You Can Buy in a Store. Thanks for joining me, Kate.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
So we just finished watching an SNL sketch, just to let you know. If you're listening to this when the episode came out, it is early January, but we just finished watching an episode about New Year's resolutions. So this is probably an apt time to discuss it for most people, but I want to get into when you started this experiment of living a year of less. You didn't start it on January 1st, did you?
No, and I'm not really a huge fan of resolutions. Yeah. I started it, I will say, I guess it had a timely date.
Sure.
I started it on my 29th birthday, but it had nothing to do with that, really, even. It was just sort of this marker that came because for months and weeks before, I had been thinking that I wasn't super happy with how little I was saving, just where my money was going, that I didn't have enough money for the things that I really wanted to be doing. And then just decided, like, after weeks of kind of plotting it out, that now would be the right time. And so I'm not a fan of resolutions. I think you should do things when it comes at the right time for you. So that around my birthday happened to be the right time for me.
Yeah.
And my birthday's in July.
Yeah. And July for some people my birthday's in July too. We're actually pretty close in birthdays. It's a good time for some people to take on bigger things because it's summer, like it's a little bit quieter, but yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like, and when you're putting something together like this, and I want to go over the rules for the year-long shopping ban that was on here, because these were your rules. And I think this is important because this is something that my wife and I, and you were upstairs, we were talking about it before, and my wife's got some very specific thoughts around me taking on something like this. We've talked about the Kickstarter ban in my house because that's one of my things that I've done. But your rules were you were allowed to shop for groceries and basic kitchen supplies. And this is at the beginning of the challenge.
Yeah.
And I don't want to go into it. Again, I don't want to spoil elements of it, but this is something that you've published this before, so it's not.
Yeah.
I want to make sure that we get into the fact that this is how you kicked it off. So groceries and basic kitchen supplies, cosmetics and toiletries, but only when you run out. Cleaning products, gifts for others, and items on the approved shopping list. You're not allowed to shop for takeout coffee, which I find it's kind of that's a fascinating one because you and I go for coffee.
We do.
So it was good that I bought it for you last time we were there. That was a gift. No.
But the point of it wasn't just to make everyone buy me coffee.
No, it wasn't. Clothes, shoes, accessories you're not allowed to shop for. Books, magazine, notebooks. That'd be a big, hard one for me, especially the books and notebooks part. Household items and electronics. And then approved shopping list was one outfit for multiple weddings. You had a lot of weddings to go to.
I had a lot of weddings to go to that year.
A sweatshirt, workout pants, boots, bed, and anything that must be replaced, but the original item has to be tossed or donated. Now, when I've done the Project 333 challenge, that, and Courtney's been on the show before, we'll link to that episode in the show notes, she had some rules around that challenge as well. So when you were putting together rules for this, what were the rules that you felt had to be absolutely there
And I mean, obviously these ones were, but they're like the core rules. And then what were ones that you thought this is going to make it a little bit more than what it needs to be at this point in time? Because I think a lot of people go in, they're like, especially again, at, when we're, if they're, they're resolution driven, they're going to, I'm going to do it all. And then they fall.
Yeah.
They fall quickly and they don't fall forward either.
I think, especially even like kind of looking back at the book now, I would almost say, other than the takeout coffee part, which we can talk about, you could instead, like I found for me, it was like, you're absolutely allowed to buy consumables. So anything that you're actually using and run out of. So obviously groceries, gas for your car, if you have a car, toiletries, if you run out of them, of course you need more, as long as it's something you're using all the time, right? Of course, buy those things. So anything that you're consuming, you, to me, I'm like, for anyone, that's, you should be allowed to buy that. For me then, I would say, for me, I knew it was going to make it hard was giving up books. And that was because of changing a habit. Right. I had a really bad habit of buying a book basically anytime I heard of one that I thought sounded interesting, which was all the time. I had like over the years, I have had hundreds and hundreds of books, but I've also had lots I've never read.
Yeah.
Right. And so I knew for me it was going to be very difficult because I am an avid reader. I do read a lot, but I bought way more than I read. Always. And so I knew that would be hard. And then the takeout coffee was one. People don't have to include that. I also will throw this in for anyone who looks at personal finance or reads personal finance stuff. I'm actually not a huge believer in the whole latte factor.
Like the David Box stuff.
Yeah, like you're not allowed to have your $5 coffee or whatever. You can have it. I don't care. Like, I have them now. So I'm not, it was never about that. For me, it was that I wasn't comfortable with the fact that I was living and working from home.
Right.
But I was spending over $100 a month on takeout coffee that I just wasn't comfortable with it anymore.
Right.
So I just sort of, I knew it would be hard. I actually didn't realize how hard that one would be. but though I knew I had to add those two things. And that's where I'll say, you know, for something like this, it should be absolutely personal to anyone who's doing it. Is that what I would say, like, whatever your biggest vices are that you're not comfortable spending the amount you have been, or you know you've been buying too much and you're not actually using it, add those things to the things you're, to the list of things you're not allowed to buy.
Right.
Mine are books and coffee, or they were for the year.
Well, and you mentioned this in the book, and, you know, I mean, I'm looking at the thing you say about, you know, the never argue with the reasons that your readers or anyone give for why they can't do what you're doing, because personal finance is personal. And I love that. When I read that part, I'm like, that's what I think about productivity as well. It's personal. And when you are doing something that, if you, when you're creating a framework or an experiment or any kind of process, you, with an objective in mind, then you have to treat it subjectively. Because if you, like, so for example, the book thing, like I'm the same as you. I've got books there that I've never read. So if I was going to do this, my wife and I were talking about the different rule ideas was, okay, I get Amazon credit for Amazon affiliate stuff. What do we do with that money? Normally I buy books with it. Well, what if the rule was I get an allowance of one book per month, right? Like that could be, that could be a rule. But there could be a subset of that rule. And again, this is me being a bit more complicated, but I don't get to do that until I've read all the books that are already here that haven't been read yet.
Or you can buy the one, but you're not allowed to buy another one until you've read that one.
Right, right. And the other thing is I subscribe to Blinkist. I'll link to that in the show notes as well. I can't buy a book that I haven't looked at on Blinkist first. You know, like you used to go to HMV and you'd be able to preview it. I can get a look and go, you know what, there's something here that is going to be, you know, or maybe it's, and again, this is because I buy a lot of books for research. Well, if something in, like, so a great example would be the book Homo Deus, right? Which is the new book that the author of Sapiens wrote, which I also own. There are some elements in that book that I think would be really helpful for the work I do. I would not be allowed to buy that book unless I read the Blinks and said, oh, there's something here that I'm going to be able to dig deeper into. So that book is on my approved purchase list. So there's lots of ways to do it that you can, where you don't feel restricted by it. And I think that's what a lot of people do when they look at anything that's a framework, is they look for where the restrictions are, and then they say, nope, can't do it. Right. Yeah. And that's is did you come across that a lot when you were talking to people about this? I know you mentioned in the book, and I want you to touch on that a little bit, is the idea that people said, you know, who you came across that was like, oh, this is going to be, you're killing it. And then others like, you're absolutely mad.
Yeah, there was definitely a mix of all of it. I think that my closest friends and family knew right up front, like, even if they maybe thought it was crazy, they didn't tell me that.
Right.
But knew that I would probably go after whatever I'd set out to. And mm-hmm. so they were just supportive of it. But I definitely had some people who, and so both friends and readers, I will say on the friends wise, it wasn't so much that they thought I was nuts. It was more like they didn't understand the rules, and they felt the restriction was so big already mm-hmm. that they would just not invite me to things.
Right.
So they would not invite me to dinner out because they thought I was going to say no.
Even though that's not one of your rules.
That was not on any of the rules.
My wife thought that too. She thought immediately, she goes, well, take out coffee. So does she go for dinner? I'm like, no, that's not a rule. Like mm-hmm. the rule is you could go out and you talk about that. But when you go to New York, like you didn't spend a dime, but people are like, oh, like where did she like buy? No, you had to go out to eat.
Yes.
But yeah, but most people, they make it bigger, or they put their own, we talked about confirmation bias, they kind of endow you with that.
Yeah.
Right? And that's dangerous to do when you're talking about something that's so personal.
It is. And I think it's it goes to this idea I've been thinking about a lot lately, because especially with the book coming out now and talking about it a lot more and hearing from a lot more people who are saying that they want to take on something like this, but there's a lot of buts. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing I really want to make sure I'm telling people, because I don't know that I said it enough in the book or that I said it at all, is I really want to make sure people know that it's worth taking on a challenge, even if you do screw it up. Mm-hmm. So what if you screw it up? If you're like, I'm going to do it for 30 days. If on day 19, you screw up and buy something, don't stop. Like, okay, you did it. That's whatever. You can like think about it. Maybe you want to journal about it or do whatever you do to reflect on that. Mm-hmm. So learn from it, but keep going, because it still feels great to get to the end of 30 days and go, I did it for 29 days.
Yeah.
There's so many lessons still in that. So mm-hmm. don't stop. There's no reason that you have to stop. I get why we do, because I talk about that a lot in the book too, of just when I screwed up partway mm-hmm. through, I talk about how I know you can quickly go into the downward spiral of saying really awful things to yourself. Like, you're a failure. You should just give up. Why did you even bother?
Right.
I know how quickly our brains just do that. That's another habit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we just do it and then we're self-sabotaging everything.
Yep.
So instead, really just like in those moments go, okay, I made a mistake. Whatever. This is what's happened. This is what is happening. Carry on. And then get to the end of it. And more, it's more like, even if you did it for a year and you shopped 3 times or 10 times, like, doesn't it still feel good? And didn't you still learn a lot? Or couldn't you still learn a lot by continuing to go?
And we'll talk a little bit about the idea of the when you screwed up in the bonus episode. But you're right. I mean, I found, and we talked about one of the times I screwed up as well. So it'll be interesting to dive into that. And people in my community, the members of my community will get that episode. So if you want to learn more about that, go to productivities.com/membership. But I want to talk about this idea of shame. And I was listening to the Tim Ferriss show with Terry Crews. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. But this idea of shame and guilt. And before you arrived today, I talked to my son about this, because as a parent, and I want to talk about doing this as a family too, because it gets very, I mean, Courtney mm-hmm. and I talked about this a bit as well. Same with Joshua Becker and I, when mm-hmm. I had him on the show. Again, link in the show notes, lots of links in the show notes. but
all my friends.
Yeah, all your friends. It. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a theme going on here. But I told him, you know, I tried to explain to him, because it's hard as a parent when you have to be very conscious about how you craft your message to your children, because to say you're a bad boy versus you did a bad thing, They create two different sets of responses. Saying you're a bad boy creates shame. Mm-hmm. Saying you did a bad thing creates should. Should doesn't always, but it will elicit guilt more than shame. Can you talk about a little bit about the idea of shame and guilt during your challenge? Because it could even be related to the idea of, and remember, less is a subjective term too. So people, if they read, and I think this is a message you might want to convey as well. I don't want to totally speak for you, but if people, a year of less is subjective. Mm-hmm. So your less is different from my less is different from my daughter's less, which is different from, you know, anyone listening to this episode's less. So can we, there should be no shame found in that either, right?
No. Okay. So one thing just on that is that I almost wished, like, it's always in hindsight, right? I sort of wish I hadn't called it a shopping ban, because realistically, it was just shopping less.
Yeah.
Right? And so sometimes I think, like, maybe if it had been framed that way...
I think you needed it, though.
I
think I would need it, too. Yeah. I would need to know that I'm not allowed to do it. It was a permission denied thing, because...
Yeah, like the red stamp.
Yeah, because
no.
Your brain, like, there's that part of our brain that goes... Well, what's the harm? What's the harm? But if you say, no, you're banned or you're not allowed, that speaks to that part of the amygdala, the part that's, you know, it understands that word versus, well, it's a credo or it's a manifesto. It's like, well, the manifesto is long and there's probably some wiggle room in there, but a ban is like, you're not allowed. Right.
Yeah. So, but I think it's more in the communication of it, because everyone just looks at like, oh, I'm banned from shopping for a year. And I'm like, realistically, I had a small list. Mm-hmm. I was actually allowed to buy some things, right? Like, so it's not like I never bought anything. So to go back to the shame part of that, it's interesting because personally, I can say that I'm someone who very much, I talk myself into doing things. Mm-hmm. I will come up with any list of justifications for something. But I know how quickly that can turn into like almost like a relapse.
Yeah.
Right. Like if you you talk yourself into it, you do the thing that goes against the rules that you've set out for yourself, whether it's a resolution or something like a shopping ban, but you break the rules or whatever. And you can very quickly turn that into I'm a bad person. And it's not just, oh, I've done something bad. It's like, I'm a failure. I shouldn't have bothered. Mm-hmm. And so I remember going through that myself and then having to very quickly flip the switch and be like, no, I'm not a bad person, but I don't actually need this thing that I just bought. I don't need it. Mm-hmm. And so having to reframe that and knowing that I didn't want to go down the spiral, because that is what had always led to me binging on things. Mm-hmm. It had always led to me then going on a huge shopping spree or something, or just like completely giving up. And so people say that to me, that I'm worried that it would just cause me to binge. It feels too restrictive and I would just binge. That's when I'm like, you need to give yourself some grace. If you do so-called like, you know, break a rule, I'm like, it's not you're a bad person. It's just, and like, I also want to say, spending money isn't bad and buying stuff doesn't make you a bad person.
Right.
We need stuff. It's fine. Like, buying stuff is fine. Mm-hmm. It just feels so much better when you get to a place where you're only buying stuff when you need it.
Yeah.
It just feels better.
Yeah.
You're not wasting money. It feels so much better to actually use the thing. Like, right? Like, you've gotten to a place where you've probably thought about it a bunch of times. I have a really stupid example for this, but it's one that's been really... It's a good way to illustrate it.
Is that
for I'm living in a new apartment, or it's been about almost a year now, but for probably the first 6 or 8 months that I was there, I was so frustrated because I would find I was just leaving my coat all over the place. Mm-hmm. So, and wet coats, like I live in Squamish, BC, which is like one of the wettest cities in Canada. So usually a wet coat, I'm just leaving them all over the place. And that's because, for whatever reason, the way that they designed the front hall closet, it just, like, if it opens or when you open it, it hits other things.
Right.
And it's just super awkward. Mm-hmm. So finally, after months of really thinking, like, this is so annoying, this is so frustrating, I went out and bought a coat rack. That's not something I would ever normally buy, because I would try and be like, oh, I have a closet. I do have a closet. But it's really freaking annoying.
Yep.
So now I just bought, like, whatever, $8 or whatever it was. I bought a coat rack. I hang my coats on it, and it felt good to make that purchase, because I'm buying something but I needed it. It feels good then, because every time I look at it, yeah. I'm like, I can see that it's covered in coats, and mm-hmm. it feels good.
But you're not averse to taking on new challenges to, and you did this, you mentioned this in the book too, is new things to kind of augment the experiment or enhance it, which is interesting because, so like, for example, if you, like you rent, I'm assuming you rent, right?
Yes.
Okay. So if you owned your place, you might have said, well, what if I modify the closet to make it more suitable? And then you'd have to have a skill set, although your dad, dad would be able to, but you could do that, right? So it creates this, you then have the option, because you put this in your head of like, okay, I am trying to be more mindful with what I purchase. So ultimately what I do is, instead of buying the coat rack, I make the closet more tenable, mm-hmm. right? And you did that with a few things during the I don't want you to get the specifics, but what I like to talk about is at the end you talk about the fact that one of those things you decided, meh, it's not for me. Like, it's not something that I'm willing to do, right? Do you remember?
Gardening.
Yes.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
Yes.
I feel bad. I'm like, if our friend Paul Jarvis listens to this, he has the best green thumb, so he will make fun of me forever. But I'm just not someone who's great with plants. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. It's like I truly want to. Want to be able to have a garden.
It's one of my monthly themes coming up this year, so we'll see if I can
make,
because we have the space, and we live in a community where, you know,
people do.
Urban gardens are a thing.
Well, I grew up in this neighborhood when I was a kid,
right.
I grew up, like, my mom always had a garden, and so when I was really young, it was me, my mom, and my aunt. They always had gardens. When it was, like, when my mom got married to my stepdad, we had huge gardens, tons of fruit trees, all kinds of stuff. So, like, my family knows what they're doing. For whatever reason, I have not picked up on that. I also think part of it is, like, I travel a lot. I'm not home enough to really, I don't know, even as something that, like, just watering, I'm not around enough to do it properly. Mm-hmm. And so anyways, halfway through, I had this realization that I wanted to try to garden and to create some of, or like be able to make some of my own produce.
Right.
I really genuinely wanted to do that. And then I tried it. I changed the rules so that I could buy stuff to do that.
Yep.
And then everything died.
Yep. So, no, but that's the thing is that, again, it's, that you had the core elements of the framework, right? And this is what I talk. I know you talk about this too, but when you're building routines, it's habits stacked upon. So you've got this foundation. So even if the gardening didn't work, which it didn't, it's not like, and you talked about this earlier, it's not like, well, nothing works. But that's what a lot of people do, is they say that, you know, the new thing they tried didn't work, so then everything doesn't work.
Yeah.
And that's, I think, when you talked about shame and guilt, and I think that this is really important, is if you get specific about it, then it elicits the guilt factor if you care enough about it. And then you can put something in place to mitigate it going forward. Like, if you felt guilty that you, and you talked about this about the e-reader, then you could put in place the I'm not going to get that email anymore, like you talked about, or I no longer will buy electronic books. Like, you could go even that far if you want. But I think the thing is if you don't get specific enough, then you can cast a big shadow on yourself.
Oh yeah. I would say, like, it was something as simple as like the gardening example there of like, then essentially, like, it's like I did set it up so I could almost like break the rules. Like, I changed the rules so I could do this thing, and then I did it and it didn't work. But the key point in that, like in the spending and the habit part of that, is that I actually tried it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't just buy the thing. And our friend Anthony Ongaro talks about this a lot. Like, it's the false first step.
Yeah, well, we have the link to that show notes as well. So that'll be in the show notes as well, yeah.
Because I didn't buy the gardening stuff thinking now I'm a gardener.
Yeah.
I bought the stuff and I did all of the things.
Yep.
And then I wasn't great at it.
Yeah.
So I did make an attempt. And I think that is another point of it, of just like, I'm not bad. And what I did doesn't make me a bad person. The fact that I changed the rules and bought these things, that also doesn't make me bad. It's very natural, especially for doing something as long as a year.
Mm-hmm.
Life changes.
Yep.
As many years go on, your hobbies change.
Yep.
Like, I couldn't have told you, you know, 5 years ago, let's say, that I would be into overnight backpacking. But now I am, right? And so I'm like, that comes with some different stuff.
Yep.
We need some different stuff I didn't need 5 years ago.
Yep.
So life changes and you're going to buy things, and buying things doesn't make you bad. You're not a bad person. It's normal, I think, and I think healthy to feel some amount of guilt for things that, yeah, you know, maybe you shouldn't have done.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just like a healthy amount. And you're not saying bad things. You're like, ugh, that just doesn't feel good.
Yeah.
And so you're not a bad person. It's not about that. No shaming. But just that didn't feel good. So, like, I don't want to do that again. How can I not do that again?
Before we wrap up, I want to talk about a simple thing that people can try. And I'm going to try this. And there's lots of things you can put in place to make this happen. And that's the television ban.
That interesting? I love that you pulled that out.
So, first off, that didn't include Netflix, did it?
Yes.
It did?
Yes.
Damn it.
I hadn't had cable. I haven't had cable since 2011.
We didn't have cable for the longest time when we had Grace. We just didn't have it. And we found shows that we wanted through other means for an extended period of time. But then we eventually got it because, you know, when one of us was home with our kid, there were moments where that's what you... It's all you could do.
Yes.
to survive. We have cable now, largely because of sports. But I'm not really paying attention to sports as much as I used to. Namely because... well, first off, most of my teams aren't doing very well. It's very helpful. But also, there's some other ramifications. Like, there's other things, which I'll talk about to members of my community in a bonus episode at some point. But how did you... I mean, you made this both a quantitative and a qualitative thing. Can you talk a little bit about it without giving too much away? Or why you did it, maybe, is a...
Yeah. So it's so interesting. Like, I found, as the year went on, I sort of was realizing that there were other things that I also wanted to cut out, even if it was just temporary. And it goes to the idea of being a more mindful consumer of everything.
Including time.
Including your time.
Yeah.
And so with television... And it'll be interesting to talk about this now because you'll be interested to hear what I'm doing for 2018.
Okay.
I don't have a resolution, but I've got something that's happening. So it was so interesting because I got to this point. I mean, I'm someone who I think it's very fair to say, especially if you read the book, that I numb things.
Mm.
I numb emotions that I don't want to feel.
Right.
And one of the ways I used to do that was to have constant background noise.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So constant, a TV on. The thing is, I would pretty much watch stuff I'd already seen.
I read the book, by the way, partly with pro wrestling on in the background because it's just noise.
It's noise. And but I would watch shows I'd already seen.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that many movies. I didn't watch that much documentaries, just anything I could learn from.
Right.
There was nothing really like that. When I would turn on Netflix, I would just watch the same shows I've watched before. I'd watch all X number of seasons. Just let it go.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like I would sit and watch every minute of it. I just had it on all the time. But then there
were...
Did
you feel shame when you click the, like, are you still watching this show? Are you still watching? Yes.
It's so funny. I think I had no shame about it. But because again, like I was doing things.
It was background noise. Yeah.
I still remember sort of one day realizing I wasn't happy with how much noise there was.
Mm-hmm.
And then really doing some thinking and going back and thinking of there were certain couple of shows I had watched and then going, okay, this one had 7 seasons. This one had 9. Let's add up all the episodes and each one's like 44 minutes long or whatever. And realizing how many, like, weeks, not just, like...
I think Chris touched on this a little bit in his book, The Productivity Project, as
not
well,
just, like, days of your life, like, how many weeks of your life. And it's not that you've wasted them all, because, like I said, you are doing other things, but it's noise I didn't need to hear.
Right.
So, anyways, I decided it was partway through the shopping ban. I decided to do a 30-day television ban, and I cut out, no Netflix. I obviously didn't have cable. I couldn't watch anything. Like, I couldn't, if I was like, oh, I can find it on another website. No, like, I couldn't watch anything.
Mm-hmm.
Very quickly realized I was actually fine a good chunk of the time because I would replace it by podcasts and audiobooks,
yep.
Which was great. And very helpful because at that time I was also thinking of quitting my job. So I started listening to a lot of different podcasts, either about that or from people who were self-employed.
Yeah.
So it was very helpful actually to sort of get me in the right headspace. But I realized I just like really needed something when I sat down to eat meals.
Oh, really?
I don't know why. That was like my thing. And I didn't change this right away, but partway through I decided to change it so I could watch a TED Talk during meals. Because that's actually the perfect amount of time to be watching something.
Yeah, no more than 18 minutes.
Yeah. And they're usually like 10 or 15, which like you're done eating in 15 minutes.
In fast food, you could watch Derek Sivers. Because they're only 3 minutes long.
So anyways, I decided to do that. And then I actually found, like, there were only some days I did that. Mm-hmm. Some days I didn't.
Sure.
And then there was, partway through that month, I did travel to Toronto for work and stayed with a friend. She has cable. I wasn't going to walk away and, like, not hang out with her while she had something on, right? Like, I'm not going to be like, well, I can't watch this, so I'm going to leave the room and go sit by myself. So there were times where I was definitely around television, but sitting down and intentionally doing it for the better part of the 30 days, I was successful with that.
So what are you doing now?
I canceled my Netflix account.
Whoa! That's going to say, well, it's what, $12.99 now, I think, or something
like
that?
$11.99.
Yeah.
It's not that much, and it's not about the money, though.
No. It's about being intentional. Yeah.
It's about being intentional.
So it's interesting. So I want to, before we, like, one of the things that, obviously, when you have a family, it's more challenging. So I used to have a TV in this office, actually. It was right up there. We sold, like, I got two TVs at Target when Target was closing in Canada. Two for $150 each. They were flat screens. They were great deals, screaming deals. So I had two of them. One in my office because I wanted to do what Pat Flynn had done with his office and have a TV in here so I could rehearse my talks and all that stuff. Which was, I thought, was really a great idea. And then we had a second TV for the downstairs because we were just moving into the downstairs to have a second TV there, which we thought would be great for the kids. And then upstairs, we already had the one. This year, we sold the one in my... We actually took the one from my office and sold it and kept the one for the downstairs. And we had an Apple TV on the one down there. But for me, I think what I'm going to do is my wife and I could watch a particular show on demand. And that's the thing is a lot of people go, well, I must watch this show now while it's on because it's on. Man, you don't have to do that. We have PVRs. Like, you could literally either A, record it and watch it when you have prescribed, like you set aside, like TV time, which is what families used to do. Like, yes. Back in when TV first came out, it's like everyone sat around the TV and watched, like, the shows, right?
Yeah.
Like they would do with the radio, because you couldn't, you know, you had to prescribe that. Secondly, if you wait and it shows up on Netflix, you could do the whole binging thing, which is a whole other issue.
Oh, yeah.
It's a huge issue for a lot of people. So for me, what I'm going to do is I will not, my plan is to not watch anything live. So anything
sports,
that's part of it.
Okay.
And that's hard because a lot of people struggle with FOMO and this fear. Mm-hmm. Like I was able to do it largely this year with sports because we canceled all the sports channels, but we kept like basic cable. So we only have basic cable now, but Colton mainly watches Netflix and so does my daughter. So if we were going to cancel cable, the reason we keep cable, and this is why I reason a lot of people, is because you bundle it with everything else and it seems like nothing. We get pushed a lot into the, like, we get a lot of calls like, hey, up your cable, up this. We've been really, really good about that. So we kind of found a medium that works for us as a family. And I think that's the challenging part for a lot of people is they go, well, the family does it. So now you can make those choices. I, like, again, not watching anything live. If I want to watch sports, there's ways to watch them on demand when you want to watch them. But it's the same reason why, and you can kind of cater it so your family knows how you operate. My family knows that Saturday is family day, so therefore that's when we go see movies. Like, that's just generally. So you can make it work, but you have to be intentional about it. Whether it's canceling your Netflix account altogether, or whether it's doing what you did as a whole. If you're not doing it intentionally, and the last thing is you working slowly. And I think that's a big thing that people don't equate with productivity and time management is the idea that when you slow down, you make you make better choices because you're not caught up in the culture of speed. And productivity isn't about speed. It's about being intentional and then saying, how am I going to pay attention to that? And when you have less stuff, you find that there's, you can pay more attention to the stuff that actually matters.
Well, and I'd also want to go back to something you said earlier about how habits compound.
Yeah.
Right. And so I actually think that, or like habits stacked on top of habits. I have a saying for it in the that more relates to personal finance, but it's that every small change you make pays compound interest. Mm-hmm. Right. Because once you've made one, you're able to go like look back and go, okay, I did that thing, so now I can make another change. Mm-hmm. So I've done this with all kinds of things. So you could look at my story or something and be like, oh, you see this person who's quit drinking and didn't shop for, I actually didn't shop for 2 years.
Yes.
And you know, you could look at all these different things and be like, and paid off my debt and quit my job. And you could be like, oh, she's done all these things. But I'm like, everything has been one at a time, one at a time. Right. And then looking back and going, oh, I can do that. And that's where, as an individual, it helps you. It doesn't feel as overwhelming. You don't have to do all of the things all at once. But also within a family, you only have to try and change one habit. And you can also only lead by example.
Yes.
Right. Like, I get a lot of questions because, yes, I am single and I live alone. So I don't have a family to answer to or to worry about when coming up with my list of rules or anything. But I still believe you can only lead by example.
So well, you can create your own rules and with them in mind, right? Like it doesn't have to be, I mean, you can still be an individual in the family unit. Like you don't just have to say, well, this is how the family does it. So that's the end of it. Like when I did the whole 30, I was the only one that ate whole 30. No one else did. When I went, you know, I mean, I'm eating meat again, but when I went largely vegetarian, and I eat mostly vegetarian still. I didn't say, hey, everyone, you can't, it's personal. Like you said, it's personal. And I think that, you know, the idea of making those small changes, like we saw that SNL sketch at the end where he said, I should have started smaller.
Yeah.
maybe not with the other things that he did, including the last thing, or the second last thing, third last thing,
second,
the NSFW thing. but that's the thing is I think the idea of, I think your year of less can start anytime you want to. Like I say, you can start the year you want anytime you want, but also it can be, it's your year of less, not mine, not yours. It's you, listener.
And you don't have to do a year.
No.
Or like your year could be just one of those things, like no books for a year. I'm going to read everything I own. And that's your only rule.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like it can be whatever you want it to be, but it should be personal because when it is personal, you'll actually move towards it. Like you'll actually want to achieve it.
Well, that's an intention.
Yeah.
If it's an intention, then it's like it's you, that's you've decided that.
Yeah.
Whereas if it's just if it's just a task, it tends to be something that you want to check off as many as, it becomes more quantitative than qualitative. Kate, this has been great. The book, The Year of Less, How I Stopped Shopping, Gave Away My Belongings, which we didn't get into too much, but they got to read the book to get that, and discover life is worth more than anything you can buy in a store. It's out. It's coming out. It's not quite out yet as this goes live, but where can people get it and where can people learn more about you?
You can read about me. My blog is kateflanders.com. Kate is C-A-I-T, which is super weird.
Yeah, it's not really that weird.
Well, it's not normal, Kate.
I can Siri it and it spells it right, but it's probably because you're in my contacts.
Yeah, I'm in your contacts. But everything's on there. The book's out January 16th. Oddly, I'm facing the challenge of everyone seems to be distributing it early.
Yeah, but yours is going to be like the resolution fixer because by that time, a lot of resolutions
they'll be over.
Yeah, they'll be like, I can't do. Oh, wait, I can do this. So there you go. And you're not on Facebook anymore.
No, well, I am, but I'm not going to be in two more weeks.
Just don't go there.
Don't go to Facebook. But I do hang out on Instagram.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much for joining me today. Thanks to Kate for stopping by the show. I have a great time chatting with her. So you got to pick up the book. It's available using the links in the show notes. And again, this is, you know, if you're listening to this when the episode came out, this is the time of year for most people where
you know, that kind of thing happens where you want to start thinking about having a year of less stuff, of less worry, of less overwhelm. So again, pick up this book and thanks for listening. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks to John Polster for producing the show in less time than usual he's given to do so. And again, thanks to Kate for joining me. Big thanks to you, of course, for sticking around. That's it for this week. Until next time, I am Mike Vardy, the host of the Productivities Podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.